in 1975, when Kiss released Alive, it was unheard of for a band that really didn't have like a bunch of big hits to actually release a live album. A live album and a kind of best of album were kind of like, you know, two halves of the, you know, same sandwich. But the because the sales of their first three studio albums were kind of like lukewarm. I mean, so they didn't really have any cachet to go, say, we're going to do a live album. But the band was going so well on the strength of their live performances. I mean, like the live, they blew away like every other band, like some bands that were like really famous and they got like pissed off. So they put two and two together and the decision was made to try to capture the energy of their live show, you know, with a live recording. They're like, well, the people like the live thing, so let's do a live record. Makes sense, right? So this is exactly what Alive, the album, actually did. You know, within a few months, Kiss went from being like this working band, you know, kind of mid-level kind of thing, to international rock stars. And the rest, as they say, is Kiss-tory. So on this week's Ludini Rock and Roll Circus podcast, we will tell you everything you didn't know about Alive, the album that started Kiss on the path to rock and roll superstardom. Get ready to rock out with your talk out. It's the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. My little loves out there in podcast land.
What is going on?
Welcome to the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. I am your host, the ringmaster, the ringleader, if you will, here, the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. We have the current cast of characters as it stands as of right now is Lily V6 from Rock Rage Radio.
What's up?
And Pittsburgh Kevin from Pittsburgh.
Hey, how you doing?
So we're going to have a good show tonight. As I said in the intro, we're going to be talking about Alive by Kiss. Every second week of each month is devoted to an album. We take a classic album and we just kind of go through it, tell the story of it, talk about the tracks, sometimes rank the tracks. We have a lot of fun and we're going to be taking your questions and ideas as well. So we'll be watching on Facebook. So those of you that are hanging out with us live on Facebook, good on you. A few things I need to bring up. First of all, shout out to some sponsors, wolfscustoms.online. They do custom instrument painting. Very cool stuff, not just like painting it a different color, but they do hollow flash and engraving and all kind of cool stuff. So check them out, wolfscustoms.online, rockrageradio.com. If you love listening to great music 24/7, you don't want to pay for Sirius satellite radio or anything like that, you can get this. You can take it everywhere with you on your mobile device, rockrageradio.com. Download the app. We are their Sunday noon show. So that's pretty exciting as well. Please, guys, if you listen to the show on iTunes, please give us a like. Give us give us a good review. Not a like. A like is on Facebook. Give us a good review. You can write a little review. Give us a 5-star rating and subscribe. That really helps us out. And I know, my website. You can go to LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com. There's a lot of great information there, including the history of the podcast and things like that. We have some great offers for you. If you go to lulombardimusic.com, we have some giveaways and things like that. You can get on our mailing list, lulombardimusic.com. And I think that's pretty much, did I hit all the things?
It sounds like
I did. And I know sometimes I get, you talk too fast, but I'm just trying to get past all this BS so we can talk about the good stuff.
I love the good stuff.
The good stuff. So I think that we need to talk about this album from 1975 that not only launched Kiss's career in a big way, but kind of inspired a lot of other artists to like rethink the live album and kind of make a live album like just part of their catalog. This is our live album. Before then, it was like, oh, you did a live album or you didn't. But it just became like a thing, right? Like after that, it was like
everybody had to
have a live album. So it really reinvented, because, hey, Kiss had a big hit with it. Maybe we'll have a big hit with it. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't know. And I think a good podcast topic or mini topic at some point might be songs that are more well known for the live version
than
the studio version. So that might be something we should talk about in the future. There's a whole whole slew of those things. So you can kind of thank Kiss for that, I would say. So Lily usually starts us off with some like background and some ideas, and then maybe we can go through the tracks and just have a good old time with this Kiss thing here.
Good old time. So first I would like to say that Altered States is keeping my drink from freezing my hand off. I want to say that they gave me a koozie.
Oh, nice.
Very awesome band. Check them out sometime. Anyway, Alive, fourth album overall and first live album by Kiss, considered to be their breakthrough and a landmark for live albums. Double album contains live versions of selected tracks from their first three studio albums, Kiss, Hotter Than Hell, and Dressed to Kill. Was recorded at concerts in Detroit, Michigan, Cleveland, Ohio, Wildwood, New Jersey, and Davenport, Iowa on May 16th, June 21st, July 20th, and July 23rd, 1975. The album's title was an homage to the 1972 live album Slayed Alive from the English rock group Slayed, a band that heavily influenced Kiss. That I did not know. From 73 to 75, Kiss released three albums, the ones we mentioned before. Although the three albums helped establish a cult following, they were commercial failures, basically. Great songs on all the albums, but guitarist Paul Stanley attributed the low sales to Kiss's weak sound when they were in the studio versus when they were in concert. So, according to Stanley, I never thought any of our first three albums captured the intensity of what the band was going for or was. It was a problem because people who would come to see, many of those people weren't buying the albums. They were just there for the live show. And they were obviously famous for the elaborate stage performances, the blood, the flying, the pyro, and the crazy makeup. So, people thought it was more worth it just to go see them live than to buy their albums. It was recorded over the four stops on the Dressed to Kill tour. I feel like I'm really echoing for some reason.
Sexy.
I know, right? The 78-minute double album comprises 16 songs from the band's first three albums. The live performances featured elaborate setups. For example, during the song 100,000 Years, crew members used flamethrowers to engulf the stage in a ring of fire, and Peter Criss's drum kit rose high above the other band members. And my next section is Alive or Not.
Before Tommy Lee did it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, before Tommy Lee.
You know, that was a... Yeah, it was the greatest show. It was like the Ringling Brothers play rock and roll.
Right. Yeah.
It was like the greatest show on earth.
Yeah.
And that's really was the thing. And I just remember anytime Kiss would be on television in the 70s, it was just like you wanted to see it. You had to tune in. Mm-hmm. You wanted to check them out because it was just something that like no other band looked like them and like did what they did or anything.
And it was also produced by Eddie Kramer. Had to bring that up.
So Eddie Kramer's done a lot of great classic albums, worked with pretty much everybody.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about...
I hate when I do that.
Let's do a little talk about the mentality that goes into... screw it, we're going live. That's basically what they did.
We don't know anything about that.
and it was the kind of thing that like... It was sink or swim for them. They just didn't really know what else to do. But Kiss sort of built their whole business around doing things their own way, doing what they wanted to do, not what was traditionally done. And this is no different. You should never have to follow anybody else's rules. Nothing should get in the way of what you believe in. Quote from Mr. Paul Stanley himself talking about the making of Alive. Another thing that's, we were talking about Kiss honing their live show and putting such an amazing live show. One of the reasons, you know, and this is something that bands do all the time now, but this was really hard for a band that like had no money really behind them or anything to do. Kiss was video recording their rehearsals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not just with a video camera, like multiple cameras. They were doing multiple camera shoots. And that was one of the reasons why they like were able to hone all that kind of choreography and things that they were doing on the stage. Because they could sit back and take a look at it. This is, of course, now because everybody's on YouTube. But it was something that a lot of bands use. And I know a band for sure because I know a guy who was in a touring version of this band. You know, have you heard of Manowar?
Mm-hmm.
A guy I know was in a touring version of that, and for prep for that, they did a lot of videotaping of their rehearsals, and they would video record the shows as well, and the bass player, who kind of owns the band, would really critique them very, very hard after every show. They'd have to go back. It was no partying. They had to go back to the room and watch the video. And he would say, "You missed that cue. You didn't do that right." Blah, 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 blah. I asked Tom, I'm like, "Well, what about the music?" And he's like, he says, "It was assumed you would play the notes right. Like, that was a total no-no. You didn't play wrong chords, wrong notes, stuff like that." He was all about, like, do you have the choreography right? Are you where the pyrotechnics are supposed to be, et cetera. So that Kiss starts all of that, right?
Yeah, it's really important, too, because sometimes little bits of magic happen. And if you don't capture it, you know, I'm sure you've noodled around on the guitar and just recorded yourself, and you go back and listen, like, wow, that was kind of special right there, you know? And I'm sure it was the same thing with these guys videotaping their rehearsals. You know, maybe this guy would move this way, and they'd look at that and go, you know what?
Let's do that. That's great. That's
exactly. Right.
Absolutely. You pick up all kind of stuff on that. But just one more thing about the visuals is Gene said, we provide a soundtrack for our visuals. That's how important the visual aspect is. So you can imagine a band that's doing that. You have to go, like, well, how do we come across on record? Like, you know, and I know that a lot of people show that as evidence. Well, see, you know, they suck. You know, they can only because they just do stuff live and their music sucks. That's up for debate. Some people that feel that way, some people that don't. But this is the truth, is that, you know, they were kind of like, they kind of sort of, I don't want to say screwed themselves, but backed themselves into a bit of a corner with this amazing live thing. And then how could you compete with, how could the record compete? Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Legit.
You know, so you want to get into some other stuff on this?
I mean, I have the question whether it's alive or not, if we want to talk about that again.
Well, Kiss had been hated by radio. They were basically ignored by radio. This was truly a kind of like an indie band would do these days, you know, because it's radio, you're locked out of radio, just like you're locked out. You build it all on going, you know, just putting on consistently great live shows. So Kiss was like this is all that they could do. They were putting out records, but people were like,
we just want to go see them.
You know, we just want to go see them, like, you know. But this did get them on the radio. There's a story of fans surrounding a radio station and chanting and everything like that until the radio station played Kiss. So all these things happened in a very short period of time after the band had released Alive. Eddie Kramer was concerned with translating their live show onto vinyl, so they tried to jump around less so they could hit notes more. But the results were initially disappointing. So Lily, I think, wants to kind of have some information on that.
So music fans consider it to be Alive to be one of the greatest live albums of all time. It's spoken in the same breath as Frampton Comes Alive. I don't even know why I said his first name. Cheap Trick at Budokan and Deep Purple Made in Japan.
Yeah.
I know, right? I wanted to say it, I guess.
Yeah, Peter's coming Freud. Alive, all right.
And there it is. Always a dirty joke.
Yep.
It's fun. Thousands of young new guitar players, particularly the grunge era, eager to emulate the six-string heroism of Ace Frehley. Kiss and producer Eddie Kramer did record live shows. Kiss's wild and energetic stage presence did not translate well to the live recordings. When they listened back to the tapes, there were no performances that satisfied them. Kiss were too rambunctious live. They were busy jumping around, entertaining the crowd, not paying attention to each and every note. For the live albums, they weren't looking for perfection, just performances without glaring mistakes or noise. I guess I could see that because they are all over the place when they're playing.
Well, you got to imagine you run from one side of the stage to the other during the guitar solo, and then you got to sing on that note. You could be a little, your breath could be messed up. You could, like, not get quite to the mic quite in time, you know?
Stanley and Simmons had several miscues, such as playing the wrong chords, knocking over mics, and not singing directly into the mic. Producer Eddie Kramer knew that significant dubbing was needed to make the album sound good. For many years, Kiss denied the use of dubbing on Alive. In Simmons' 2001 autobiography, he said, "There have always been rumors that the Alive record was substantially reworked in the studio. it's not true. What we wanted and what we got was proof of the band's rawness and power. Then, it was not until 2003, episode of Ultimate Albums, that Kiss admitted to overdubbing. Stanley said, what we felt was necessary was to capture the energy of the performance, not necessarily having it note for note of what actually happened. Simmons said most people assume it was all live. It wasn't.
Noche.
Scandalous.
Eddie Kramer and the band re-recorded approximately 70% of the album. Kiss re-recorded parts of the album at Electric Lady Studios in August. The live recordings were so heavily altered, only Chris's drum tracks remained untouched. Even the audience was doctored as Kramer spliced together the best cheers and screams from the various Kiss performances. The band wanted the listener to feel that they were, in fact, the audience was watching the show. And since directly recording an audience would not sound good, this was considered to be the next best solution. So, first a lie, and then they admit it.
Yep. lest you think that Kiss was committing some sort of, like, sin with this, or doing something, like, really untoward. Here's a list. This is from the New Phoenix Times of live albums that aren't actually live. Okay, and they were doing Kiss. Some people were doing it before Kiss. Charles Mingus presents the Charles Mingus Quartet. Now, I'm not going to get all to the details of these things, okay? Joey D and the Starlighters, the Peppermint Twisters from 1961. Johnny Rivers at the Whiskey A Go Go, 64. The Beach Boys Party, 1965. Rolling Stones Got Live If You Want It, 1966. Johnny Horton on stage, 1967. Ravi Shankar at Woodstock, 1970. James Brown, Sex Machine, from 1970. Carlos Santana live with Buddy Miles, 72. And then finally we get
that's the wrong year too. Oh, alive too. Did they
it's
skip
alive
it?
Too.
Oh.
They skipped the live. That's probably because they know it was.
it's obvious.
They Might Be Giants from 1998. Mark Bolan. Acoustic Warrior, 99. The Black Lips, 2007. It goes on and on and on.
And it's been happening since forever.
So a lot of albums had a lot of work done. I mean, and this is just a list of, like, ones that people know for sure. I am sure that plenty of things, even on very beloved albums, were taken back and fixed. So let me try to break this down for people that don't play music. May not completely get this or feel ripped off, because they even dubbed in some crowd noises. Yeah. It's just only so much that you can capture, and you got to take it back to the technology from 1975. All right. The audio technology was nothing like what we have today, where you can mic the audience up in such a way that you can really capture the thing live the right way, et cetera. Stages were different. You know, a lot of bands weren't able to hear themselves well with the PAs and everything from that era. So you're really up against it trying to put out a live album. Also, live albums and studio albums and live performances and studio performances are very different animals. In a studio, things are super controlled. It's just, you know, and if that snare drum isn't quite cutting it, you can just keep moving mics around and trying different stuff, blah, blah, blah. You could take in the day before sampling and stuff. I mean, there are people who would take 2-3 days just to get a snare sound. Okay. You know, you have to play a show. You don't have 3 days to move microphones
right.
to get a snare sound. Okay.
Do you know how long that concert would be?
Yeah. After you're constantly stopping to fix this and fix that. excuse me. But, So this is what you're hearing in the studio, in a way, is kind of a conceit. It's kind of like, it's not really totally real. Yes, I mean, I'm not putting down the great bands that went in there and did it and everything like that. But even those bands were under controlled conditions, and they were able to do things to really make sure that they captured, I think if they had to do it multiple times, whatever, to capture that. You know, you're doing something live, it's a completely different app. Plus, when you're playing live, there's all kind of things you have to contend with that you don't contend with in a nice, controlled, relaxed, air-conditioned, perfectly, you know, you got your weed on one side and your whiskey in it, you know. I mean, just chilling. No. You're running around. You're trying to put on a show. Even bands that weren't Kiss, okay, that weren't that active on stage. You're still, and you're distracted by things. Your sound, like your guitar sound, is not consistent from show to show. So that's kind of throwing you off. And, you know, maybe the way the drums are set up and things aren't quite right and you're dealing with different little things. Maybe you got a stand that's wonky that, you know, has been wearing out for the past, you know, week, and you're stuck with it. You can't quite do what you want to do. So there's a lot of things that you're battling when you do. And even bands that play every single day, overnight, you know, over and over and over, been on tour for years, this distraction of having to be in front of an audience creates like a kind of different vibe.
I like to think it's not all venues are the same, so you're not going to get same sound.
Not all venues are the same.
Out of every show.
And you don't know what they were dealing with, you know, how many substances they had to have that day or weren't able to have, or you know, anything. Maybe the singer just ate one piece of chicken too many, and so he's like a little bloated, and he can't quite catch the breath the way he wants. Things like that would never happen in the studio. You have to contend with when you're doing a live show, and you got to multiply that a bit by Kiss because of how active and everything they are. So you can understand why this would be very, 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 very difficult. But I think that something was right because it did. The proof, as they say, the proof of the pudding is in the tasting. And when people tasted it,
they liked
it. Yummy.
They liked it. Yeah. So I know a lot of people hate Kiss. A lot of people think that they suck. They're bad musicians. But you can't sort of deny what they were able to do. And they are some trendsetters in their own way and amongst certain things. I think, Lily, you got a few more things you want to talk about.
I just was going to talk about the reception of the album, which is obviously... It got like 4 out of 5 stars on most of the charts. Alive remains Kiss's greatest album ever. Village Voice critic Robert, I don't even know how to say that last name, sorry, rated
Chris
the album.
Cal.
Yep, that's it. The album B-, stating that he and the multi-million kids who are buying it fall into neither category of those who regard the album as a de facto best of and those who regard it as sludge. Still buying it, regardless if you didn't like it or not. And it was pretty cool. I did have a copy of it, as I was saying earlier. I think I lost it in the divorce, but it had the little gatefold. There were signed little photos and everything. It came with a whole bunch of fun stuff. So if you have it, awesome. If you don't, well, then don't lose it in a divorce.
there was the band had like signed letters. Or
yeah,
something.
Like yeah, yeah. A whole bunch. It was like a whole package of
You got a tour program.
Yeah.
Which is really cool because you pay for those things and they're expensive.
They're like $40.
Yeah.
Well, that was 2 years ago. God only knows now.
Yeah, they can be expensive. They're a great piece of memorabilia to have, but they can be pricey. And so Kiss throws this in there. You know, it's just part of the whole Kiss mentality of giving good value to the customer. It's basically their whole thing. You know, you wanted the best, you got the best. Keith, don't get excited. So let's talk about some of the songs that are on this album.
So many.
And it's 75 minutes.
Well, I was going to say, it's a double record. Mm-hmm. It's not just a live album. It's a double record live album. How crazy is that?
So four sides.
Four sides of Kiss.
Fancy. Ludicrous.
So you get the full experience. It wasn't just like they put like 10 of the best things and didn't put on an album. So you kind of, you know, they sort of over-delivered.
Yeah. We do have quite a bit of watchers today, too.
We're 23 of 24 minutes in. Give some shout-outs before we get into the next part.
So we got Chris Thunderwolf, Barb Pozewski, Matt Reiser, Tracy Sampson, Michael Goltz, Carrie Livingston, Beth Petternell. Matt Reiser 100 million times and Wendy Tronka, who is the wife of the gentleman in Mike in Altered States, and she gave me this koozie and she's watching today.
Welcome. So let's go ahead and get let's just run down the tracks. I don't know if we could really rank.
I'm not going to try to rank,
but
these.
Let's just kind of go through them and talk about what the songs are and the sort of like a little bit of a background.
Vinyl One Side One, Deuce. Song appeared on Kiss's self-titled 1974 debut album. In addition to being one of the band's most popular and most covered songs, which is one of my favorites, it's a traditional concert opener. The song has appeared on many Kiss Live and compilation albums. According to Gene, he simply copied the bass line of the Rolling Stones' Bitch and played it more or less backwards, which I find to be a lot in these songs. that they sort of copied and rewrote and blah, blah, blah. I wrote Deuce on the bass, he said, so the guitars ended up shadowing the bass line or variations of it in different octaves. Deuce also had a special significance for Ace Frehley. It was the first song he ever played with Kiss. When I auditioned for the band, they said that we're going to play you a song for you to listen to and then try playing it along, and it is his favorite Kiss song to date. Gene Simmons stated about the song lyrically, I had no idea what I was talking about. Sometimes stuff means a lot, sometimes it means nothing. On July 28th, 2009, a live version was released along with live versions of 100,000 Years and Parasite in the Kiss track, one track pack for Rock Band 2. So it was in a video game I played. So there's that.
Well, Rock Band reintroduced rock music to a lot of people that never would have listened to it. Mm-hmm. That's a whole other topic. Lily?
Yes.
Your man is working hard. He's worth the deuce.
Oh, yeah?
Gene doesn't want to say too much what he thinks what the lyrics are about. So let me ask you, Lily.
Oh, don't ask me that one because I don't even know about this one. I just like singing this one while I'm listening to it, which nobody will ever hear. So.
Well,
is it about sex like every one of their
get
songs?
Get up what? And get your grandma out of here.
My grandma ain't even here.
Pick up. Old Jim is working hard this year, and baby, do the things he says to do. Baby, if you're feeling good, and baby, if you're feeling nice, you know your man is working hard. He's worth a deuce. Don't push your man behind his ears. And baby, stop crying all your tears. Baby, do the things he says. Do it. Baby, if you're feeling good, yes, baby, you're feeling nice. You know your man is working hard. He's worth a deuce.
Okay, so already now I don't like this song.
Oh, see, you ruined it, Lou.
First of all, I'm going to do what I want. No.
I was called a dude, like dropping a deuce.
Right. And unfortunately, that's
what I think of.
That's what I was thinking. So he's worth about.
A shit. Your man's worth a shit.
Maybe that's what he meant.
He's working hard. He's worth a shit.
I mean, but he still ain't going to tell me what to
Which
do.
Which is better than saying you ain't worth shit.
Right. You actually like, are worth.
Yeah, like you're worse. Yeah, like somebody's. When you say you ain't worth shit, that's like saying that like the thing that's worth the least in the world, like you're worth less than that. Mm. It's like a pretty terrible insult.
Yeah,
huh.
Yeah, I'm probably like not going to do the things he says to do though. Legit.
The other thing I thought, and then like I thought, well, maybe he's worth the deuce. Like, hey, like give it to him twice tonight.
That's a possibility.
That might have been
that's a possibility. Sure.
No.
Does anybody in the audience have any ideas on what Deuce is about?
We don't have any ideas yet, but I'm sure Matt Reiser could chime in.
That's right. Matt loves Kiss.
He is watching.
Yes. So. All right. So I just love stuff like this. I just like these rock songs are kind of like little like puzzles, you know, and you kind of like can put them together
figure
and
it
decide.
Out.
Yeah. You can figure it out for yourself or you can. You
know. I like the story it tells.
Right. So let's go to the next song on the track list. We're not, there's 16 of them. So I don't know if we have time to go through every song, but we're going to hit the major ones.
The major one.
Matt Reiser says, I got nothing on that one. Anyway, so the next one is Strutter. And this one's very, very important to me, but I'll talk about the important stuff first.
Strutter!
Released in 1974 on their self-titled debut album. It was the third single released from the album and failed to chart and then released on Alive. It is one of the few Kiss songs written by Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley together. Mm. Stanley wrote new lyrics to Stanley the Parrot, a song whose music was composed by Simmons. Stanley's lyrics display his Bob Dylan influence, and the song was featured in the video games Grand Theft Auto, San Andreas, and Guitar Hero 2. And this is one of my favorite songs because my very, very first runway show, I walked to this song.
Strutter. Wow. Yeah, you could strut to Strutter.
See, I see what you did there.
I chose the song. We were allowed to choose our song. So that was, that's it.
So what do you think these lyrics mean, Pittsburgh Kevin?
Oh, boy.
I know a thing or two about her.
Mm-hmm.
I know she'll only make you cry.
Mm.
She'll let you walk the street beside her.
Mm-hmm.
But when she wants, she'll pass you by.
Oh.
Everybody says she's looking good, and the lady knows it's understood. Strutter.
Do you think she's a working girl? Do you think she works hard for the money?
She does wear her satins like a lady.
And she gets her way just like a child. You take her home, and she says, maybe, baby. She takes you down and drives you wild.
Mm. I remember my mom used to sing this to me. And, you know, it just brings back such fond memories.
I would put these lyrics right up there with one of my favorite one-hit wonder songs of all time.
Which would be?
Hot Child.
There I knew you were going to say that. And,
well, Nick Gilder.
Yeah, exactly.
Same
story.
It's definitely a sort of same idea.
Have you heard the Donnas cover of this?
Yes,
yeah.
I have it.
Yeah, I'm like, that's awesome.
It's fun. I'm sorry, Paul. I don't see the Bob Dylan influence. I think Bob Dylan heard that, he'd be like,
what?
That's
what he thinks. He's allowed to think anything he wants to.
Did you ever see I'm Not There? It's a sort of like Bob Dylan biopic.
I have not seen it.
But there's a funny scene in the movie where somebody's talking to him and he says, what do you think of the Rolling Stones? He goes, oh, you mean that British cover band?
That's good stuff.
Oh, Mr. Dylan.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so we're having a good time here. So before we have too much fun, somebody saying something we need to address?
Nope.
Okay.
I'm just checking all the pages.
Oh, check them. Check them. Check. Let's go to one of my favorite Kiss songs.
Yes.
Let's talk about Hotter.
That's a good one, too.
Hotter. Hotter than hell.
Released on their second album of the same name in 1974, written by the band's rhythm guitarist Paul Stanley, and displays the heavy influence of the band Free. Despite being rarely performed during the years, Hotter Than Hell has appeared on many of the band's albums. It was basically a rewrite of the Free song All Right Now, due to the fact that Stanley was a big fan of Free and the song meant a lot to him. It was written about an encounter with somebody in a bar, and then at the end of the song, I didn't know quite how to end it, Stanley said, so I came up with this riff that was kind of like a Black Sabbath, and they tacked that on. During the TV movie Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park, which is hysterical, I have it, the evil Kiss performed a version of the song retitled Rip and Destroy in order to incite a crowd to riot.
She looked good. She looked hotter than hell.
I love this one.
All dressed in satins and lace. I looked at her, and it was just too clear. I had to get on the chase.
He's so theatrical.
You sound like Shatner.
Can I take you home? There's just so much we could do. I'll take you all around the whole wide world before the evening is through. Hot, hotter than hell. You know she's gonna leave you well done.
Oh my gosh.
Hot, hot, okay? Hotter than hell. Burn you like the midday sun. Mm. That brilliant lyrics.
Right.
That is so deep. Like when he's talking about hot, and then he's talking about hell. Like,
right.
Who would have ever
who would have put the two of those together?
It's like
brilliant.
It's like pickles and ice cream.
Oh.
Wow.
Brilliant.
All I'm saying is I need bread. The right size bread. I don't like this.
It won't affect your performance, will it?
It's already affecting my performance. Sorry, we digress. Because I think what we're trying to say is that the Kiss is kind of like the real life Spinal Tap in a way. especially when it came to their lyrics. I mean, quite frankly, really?
Right.
This could be the lyrics to Big Bottom or something.
Exactly,
oh my God.
Exactly right.
It's like a parody. I love Kiss, but like, you know, my buddy, Kerry, who's a great musician in his own right and songwriter, really, he and I were talking about Kiss one day. And you tell me if I'm not wrong about this.
Okay.
I think Kiss appealed. Their main appeal was to this certain age group, and then people that reminisced about being this age. And I don't know if you'll relate to this, Lily, but I think Kevin, I think all the guys in the audience will. you boys reach this age where you're starting to get boners. Oh, boy. And you're starting to think about girls.
You're right, I cannot relate to that.
But you're still playing with toys and mm-hmm. reading comic books. Kiss is the perfect band for you. Because this is what you think like love songs and stuff are.
Yeah.
She looked good, she looked hotter than hell. It's like, all right, yeah, look hotter than hell.
That's exactly what I'm thinking.
You know, and like this sort of idea that like, and this is a kind of reoccurring theme in a lot of songs, the idea that women are just sitting around waiting to have sex with you. Like it's just a thing women do.
I still think that too.
It's like all the Kiss songs are just like women portrayed in songs like, yeah, we're just, you know, we're ready to get laid. I don't know what your problem is, you know. Like they were just waiting around. Is that what women do? They just wait around for guys to come up and have
that,
sex.
Is that what happens, Lily?
No, we would just do it ourselves. We don't need.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, no. they're like women are like all women are like uber available.
That's
like
not
just
a thing,
right?
What?
But as so, you two should know,
I've been lied
so
to.
This is the thing. This all is this the thing. Time. But see, this appeals to that like just getting into puberty male. This is exactly what he's thinking. And then like the characters, the makeup and everything, they look like monsters from a comic book. Mm-hmm. So they're like perfect.
Yes.
And they're playing this sort of pseudo hard rock stuff that they do.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, it's just absolutely perfect.
Right. Fits right into the angst of that
age. Yeah,
that whole thing,
you know, you're like real awkward and, you know, horny, and but you still like your Luke Skywalker action figures and, you know.
Oh boy!
Spider-Man comics.
Yeah. You got a closet full of comics, and you have like comics, and then you're like sneaking your dad's Playboys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of like
that is exactly what Kiss is.
That's exactly it.
And so that's the mentality, and so it appealed to those people I think initially, but then I think when as people got older, it sort of gave people that kind of nostalgia for that part of that time
mm-hmm.
of their life.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They kind of get to kind of go back and be 13 again. Or whatever. So when they do a song like Christine 16, that's actually a 13-year-old kid lasting after. So it's not, you know what I mean? So like get your minds out of the gutter.
Bill Thomas said the lyrical reading was William Shatner-esque.
It was, wasn't it?
You wait.
Fascinating.
You wait.
There's more?
There's all kinds of stuff.
Man.
Do you want to know more?
Yeah.
All right. So the song. So then they go. They squeegee from Hotter Than Hell to what?
Firehouse.
We got like a theme running here.
From the self-titled debut album, the track was written by the band's rhythm guitarist Paul Stanley. During the live performances, bassist Gene Simmons had breathed fire with red lights flashing and sirens sounding. There were many incidents when this happened. One of them that occurred on December 31st, 1973 at the Brooklyn Academy of Music in New York City. When the band was opening for Blue Oyster Cult, Simmons' hair caught fire for the first time of many times.
See, Michael Jackson didn't do it first.
No.
He didn't make it cool. Firehouse has remained a concert staple and is regarded as one of the band's classic songs. It's got a fan favorite status, and the song is one of the most played songs in the Kiss catalog, having been played more than 1,400 times as of 2014. So it's more than that now. That was the last statistics on that. Paul Stanley wrote the song while he attended High School of Music and Art in New York City. He said he was inspired by British rock group The Move's song Fire Brigade. Firehouse was the first was one of the first numbers that Kiss performed during the band's earliest national TV appearance, including ABC's In Concert on February 19th, 1974. And Van Halen covered Firehouse along other Kiss songs during their club days.
That, well, of course.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, they would. They'd be a great. They, if Van Halen like couldn't have made it, like they could have been, they would have been a great Kiss cover tribute band. Yeah. They would have been a great Kiss tribute band. So, woo hoo.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Woohoo! Yeah, she'll adore you and she'll floor you with her wisdom and her vision. You'll love it and think of it till you lose all intuition. Come on, she can move you and improve you with her love and her devotion, and she'll thrill you and she'll chill you. But you're headed for commotion. And you'll need her so you'll feed her with your endless dedication. And the quicker you get sicker, she'll remove your medication. Dear, he's real freaking rock lyric. What the hell is this? She'll remove your medication.
She will.
Get the firehouse because she sets my soul afire. Get the firehouse and the flames keep getting higher. Well, we wanted the second part. You're kind of into James Brown.
But transitioning.
What is this like?
Evolution.
These are some, you know, she'll adore you. She'll floor you with her wisdom and her vision. What in the world is going on here? Kiss.
Who writes this stuff? Oh, Kiss. Yeah.
Look, Kiss is a fun band and we're poking a little fun, so.
It's allowed.
Enjoy yourselves.
It's called humor.
They laughing all the way to the bank.
Yeah. Well, they don't care.
They don't care.
Gene Simmons can find a way to get paid from this podcast, I'm sure.
If he heard us talking about it.
Ooh, yeah, I'm looking into it. Lou. I'm looking into it right now, Lou. Go to kiss.com.
We're like 40 minutes in. Hey, quick shout out. Wolfscustoms.online. Get a custom paint job done on your guitar. Rockrageradio.com. Download the app. LouLombardiMusic.com. We've got a new song that you can download. Peace in the Valley. I'll give you guys a little thing maybe of that at the end. Don't forget about Nashville Rock and Pod Expo. Nashville Rock and Pod Expo.com. .com. Oh, my God.
Wow. The dirty jokes just keep coming.
.com. Sorry, Chris. .com. Go check it out. This is a. All kind of great celebrities are going to be there. You get to meet some of your favorite rock stars and mingle with some great podcasts like this one and other guys who are in the rock podcast space. So check out. Plus, there's going to be all kind of memorabilia. And it's typically, if you like Kiss, there's typically a lot of Kiss memorabilia there. People are selling and you can look at and stuff. So go to NashvilleRockNPodExpo.com.
There you go.
C-O-M.
Oh, Lord. There should they for porn, they should have .com.
I'm sure it's somewhere.
Somebody has to have that. Let's start that.
That cannot be the first the time rich. That has been what, said.
Yeah, somebody has
rich
to
beyond
it.
Your wildest dreams.
Sell it to the internet.
So let's talk about a few more Kiss songs from some highlights, if you will, from Alive. So you pick.
Oh, I pick. I hate when you make me pick.
You love Kiss. You're a bigger fan than I am.
I don't know about all that. Let's talk about She.
She.
Released in 1975 on the band's third studio album, Dressed to Kill, because I don't think we talked about anything from that yet. The song was written by Gene Simmons and Stephen Cornell, who I think I said that wrong.
Stephen Cornhole.
Cornell. Coronel. Coronel.
Cornell.
Stephen Cornhole.
Cornhole.
man.
I said it too fast.
Why are you doing this to us?
I didn't.
Well, that's awesome.
While Simmons was in a band called Bullfrog Beer, Coronel was the originator of the song, with Simmons contributing the words and lyrics during an evening rehearsal with Wicked Lester, which was the original Kiss.
His name, Wicked Lester.
Yes.
That's actually still, I remember him talking about that in the book and going like, that's still kind of a good band.
It's cool.
Name.
It's still cool.
Yeah.
The song was originally called She Walks by Moonlight, after the line, a line in the film Hondo. The Wicked Lester version of the song is 3 minutes and 7 seconds in length, while the later Dressed to Kill version is 4 minutes and 8 seconds long, and the original line, She's No Good, was changed to She's So Good. I don't care about that stuff. Although the Kiss version lacked the original... the original's congas, played by session musician Jimmy Maylene, and flute. Ace Frehley's solo in the song was based on Robbie Krieger's solo in The Doors' song 5-1, starting in the same key and tempo. It was also self-admittedly copied by Mike McCready of Pearl Jam on the band's song Alive. Hmm. And I just wanted to bring that up because of the grunge thing.
Very, a lot of grungers liked...
Yeah.
Like the Kiss. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of Kiss-influenced music. Do you remember? You guys remember the band Monster Magnet?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're a very Kiss-influenced band. Some funny lyrics. I mean, just like... So here's the... I'll just do the rhyme.
Okay.
Day, say, pay, stay.
Riveting.
Okay. Night, tight.
Oh.
Pay, stay.
Okay. Switching it up.
Good, should.
Of course.
Ow.
Down, around... Say, stay. Good, should.
See, that could be a whole song right there.
Yeah.
That's, there's a few owls in
there.
Yeah,
I liked the owls.
Owls and O's. But,
wow.
Just like, man. Dylan's, he's definitely proud of what you guys are doing. He's thinking of doing a you know,
Kiss tribute,
Kiss tribute album, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Wow. Yeah.
That would be great.
There's some, and maybe another podcast topic might be like tribute albums, but all by one artist. So one artist does tribute, the whole album is
there's a lot of those.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The Smithereens
okay.
have a couple Beatles records. Mm-hmm. The country singer, Robbie Foulkes, has an album, all of Michael Jackson songs.
Hmm.
And it's very good. And it kind of, when you hear those songs done like that, you go like, well, these are really good songs. Like,
exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Cause they totally get over in this mm-hmm. reworking. You know what I mean? They don't sound stupid. It doesn't sound like a parody, you know? But anyways, we're digressing a little bit. So what else you got? What's next?
What do you want to do? Black Diamond?
Sure.
All right. Written by Paul Stanley. The song is the closing track on the band's self-titled first album, released in 1974. It begins with an acoustic opening sung by Stanley before a furious riff enters, accompanied by Peter Criss on lead vocals. It fades out with Ace Frehley solo, then one chord repeated during a... Who cares about that? I don't understand that stuff. The live version is usually sped up in tempo combined with stage pyrotechnics. That's the cool stuff we want to talk about. And a rising drum platform.
Who cares about how the music was made?
I am not a musician. If you want to talk about that stuff, you go for it. Covered by The Replacements and Pearl Jam later on, and several other musicians as well. But I like the rising drum platform. Because mm-hmm. that's the cool stuff to see. And yeah, I probably wouldn't have bought this.
This is a good rock and roll. But this is a song by Kiss. I think has a really cool riff. I think it kicks ass. I think it's pretty kick ass.
I like you know. Diamond.
Out on the street for a living. Pictures only begun. Got you under their thumb. Hit it. Out on the streets for a living. Pictures only begun. Your day is sorrow and madness. You got under their thumb. Woo, Black Diamond. Woo, Black Diamond. Whatever the hell that means.
Whatever you want it to
be. It's a kick-ass riff. We got a hit.
Cold Gin.
Of course.
written by Ace Frehley and was released in 1974. The song is featured on many compilations released by the band. Live versions of the song were often extended for about 2 minutes due to Frehley soloing. It's considered one of the greatest drinking songs of all time by many media sources. Guitar World listed Cold Gin as number 7 on their list of greatest drinking songs, number 14 on Liquor.com's list of top 15 drinking songs, and so on and so on. It's about a person suffering from poverty, loneliness, and alcoholism. However, the song's meaning is widely misinterpreted to be about the male sex drive, but thorough lyrical analysis shows that this is not the case. Ace Frehley confirms what the song is about in his 2011 book, No Regrets. Frehley said he wrote the song while he was in the subway. And according to him, the riff for the song was inspired by the song Fire and Water by English rock group Free. They really liked Free. Mm-hmm. As Frehley was insecure about his singing ability, Simmons sang the song in the original studio version and in most live versions, although during the Alive Worldwide tour, Frehley would sing parts of the song. And he would provide the lead vocals during his solo band.
He performs it with his solo stuff. When we worked with him a few years ago, it was one they definitely did.
Good song. And I hear a lot of cover bands are playing this one.
Heater's broke and I'm so tired. I need some fuel to build a fire. The girl next door, her lights are out. The landlord's gone. I'm down and out. Ooh, it's cold gin time again. You know it'll always win. Cold gin time again. You know it's the only thing that keeps us together. Ow.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, of course, because you can't do a song with the words cold gin in the refrain, in the mm-hmm, chorus, mm-hmm. and not people go like, shot!
Mm-hmm.
Many shots.
This song makes me feel like getting fucked up!
Many shots were drank to this song.
I am sure. So we really have to talk about it. Even if we don't talk about any other songs, this is the song we absolutely must discuss. Because this is the song, you know, if we had to talk about songs like you never really ever have to hear again. Because you've heard them so many times. But why have you heard them so many times?
Because they're good.
Yeah, because I think there's probably something to be said for mm-hmm, that, right? Mm-hmm. And what song am I talking about, Lily? V6?
Rock and Roll All Night. I've heard it about 100,000 friggin' times. Released on the 1975 album Dressed to Kill, the live version released as a single in October 1975 eventually reached number 12 in early 1976. Became Kiss's signature song and has served as the group's closing concert number in almost every concert since 1976. I did hear a different song and their last concert I went to. In 2008, it was named the 16th greatest hard rock song of all time by VH1. Was written by Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons while Kiss was still in Los Angeles as part of their Hotter Than Hell tour. During the group's concert at Cabo Hall in Detroit on January 26, 1976, Stanley introduced it as a song that was written in L.A., but they said it was written about and for Detroit. The song itself was inspired by the Slade song, Come On, Feel the Noise. For the choruses, the band brought a large group of outside contributors to sing and clap, including members of Kiss, the Kiss Road Crew, studio musicians, Peter Criss's wife. Some of the road crew used their jacket zippers to create sound. The chorus of Alive's version of the song is played at the beginning of Detroit Rock City from 1976's Destroyer. And it is played at almost every. I've only heard it not played once as their closing song.
This is one of the great rock anthems, like Slade's song. Mm-hmm. And I heard Gene say that Shout It Out Loud was an effort to write another I Want to Rock. And it kind of has the shout.
Yeah.
You could chant along to it. It's anthemic. And the lyric, I think, I will give Kiss props on this song because I actually think the lyrics are really, really good for what the song is trying to do. Uh-huh. You give us everything you got. You keep on dancing. The room gets hot. You drive us wild. We'll drive you crazy. You say you want to go for a spin. The parties just begin. We'll let you in. You drive us wild. We'll drive you crazy. You keep on shouting. You keep on shouting. And we all know the rest. That's like perfect for what the song is trying to do.
It's a great song.
I mean, I think one of the things, if you can measure something by, is like, how well does it accomplish what it's trying to do?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not Bob Dylan, sorry. But, or whatever, Bruce Springsteen or whatever. But it does what it's supposed to do, which is it's a party song.
Mm-hmm.
Get your hands in the air, party out, rock out. I mean, and
it's part of the night where I find confetti in my bra from the concert.
Yeah. It's just like there. Just a big shout for fun and having a good time. That's what Kiss is all about. And if you haven't figured it out,
yeah,
they made money on having a great time. And they did a great job.
I mean, and I think that is something that bands really need to think about. It's one of the reasons why a lot of people would go, like, I was in different cover bands and played all kind of different music. People were like, how can you stand playing this kind of music, that kind of music? I'm like, I don't look at it that way. I'm paid to bring the party. That's what I'm here to do. And people are partying, and I'm having a great time because everybody's partying. I don't care if I'm playing 80s cheese or country. It doesn't matter. Everybody having a good time? Everybody getting screwed up?
There you go.
People maybe making out and all kind of fun stuff. Well, that's it.
That's it.
That's what that atmosphere is all about. So Kiss Alive, if you've not listened to it in a while, go back. It is a very good sound. It is a very good sounding album. And one of the things that we want to say real quick is that as we said earlier, the live album really became a thing after this, and some of the albums that were inspired by this are records that we all know and love, like Waiting for Columbus by Little Feat, Live and Dangerous by Thin Lizzy, The Last Waltz, At Budokan by Cheap Trick, Live Rust by Neil Young, and a whole slew of others. A whole slew of other albums that were just, they saw, Kiss did it. So
let's do that too.
Yeah.
And was it effective? That was the thing with the Kiss album. It was effective. I think bands saw it like, well, this can be effective. We never really thought about it before. The live albums, I think up to that point, were kind of like throwaways maybe a little bit. And the idea that, no, you could kind of make something special with a live album, I think came into people's ideas after that. So check it out if you haven't seen it in a while or listened to it in a while. We haven't talked about this in a little while. SOS2020PGH.org. If you're in the Pittsburgh area, this is a charity that is trying to make sure that we keep the venues going here after the screwy year or so that we've had. Wow.
You good?
Lots going on. Happy birthday, Boz Skaggs.
Oh.
Lido.
It's that dirty lowdown.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my, this is a singer is like, I thought this girl had a great voice and she had some really big hits, but I felt like she should have had more big hits. She should have worked with Jim Steinman more. And this, of legit. Course, is Bonnie Tyler.
Oh, yeah.
Happy birthday to Bonnie Tyler.
Happy birthday.
Nick Rhodes from Duran Duran.
Yay! I don't know why we did that. I don't know.
Kanye West was born on this day in 1970.
Musical genius.
You just shut your mouth.
That's one of Lily's favorite artists.
No.
I can tell.
Wrong.
Nancy Sinatra.
That's hey.
Them boots, baby. Them boots is made for walking. Of course, the Beatles did something today.
Well, why wouldn't they?
They do something every
what did
day.
They do?
It's not fair. Those Beatles, they
were
so
damn popular. Busy.
You know, that was one of the things I took exception to with the movie yesterday. Because not only were the Beatles, like, was it the music? It was a whole cultural thing.
Yeah.
And you have to wonder, like, if the Beatles didn't happen, would the hippie culture, would any of that really have happened?
Well, like, that's
they... Because the Beatles opened the door for all kind of experimentation and stuff in music. Uh-huh, like, uh-huh. If they didn't do it, like, if we weren't acclimated by the Beatles to hear, then hear The Doors and Led Zeppelin
right.
and all this, you know, the Beatles kind of laid the foundation. Yeah. I mean, it may, none of this, there's so many things that may never have happened. We could still be listening to doo-wop or something.
Oh.
I mean, that's okay, too. But.
Yeah.
Brian Jones, Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, Charlie Watts visited Brian Jones at his home in Cotchford Farm to discuss his future in the group. The Stones later issued a press statement saying that Brian was leaving the Rolling Stones.
See ya.
Yep.
Bye.
All right. On this day in 1970, I made a big deal. So I have to say it.
No.
It's like, you know, say, oh, never mind. No,
you have to say it now.
Way to go,
this is just silly. Like, some of these, this day in music are like,
I need
reaching,
to know.
But this
I need
is
to
reaching.
Know.
Deep Purple had their van and equipment impounded by East German police while on a European tour on this day in 1970 after mistakenly driving too close to the border.
Ooh, as you do.
Dumb.
Right.
Can you stand more Rolling Stone stuff? On this day in 1974, Bill Wyman became the first Rolling Stone to release a solo album with Monkey Grip. It peaked at number 39 in the UK and 99 in the US. Album featured guest appearances by Dr. John, Leon Russell, and Lowell George.
Lowell.
On the stage 74, Bowie started a four-week run at number one with the third with the album Diamond Dogs.
Nice.
On this day in 1974, Dolly Parton was number one on the U.S. country chart with "I Will Always Love You," song that she wrote for Porter Wagoner. 74, Paul McCartney and Wings, number one on the U.S. Singles chart with "Band on the Run." George Harrison unwittingly contributed the first line of one part of the song "If We Ever Get Out of Here" when he said it during one of the many Beatles business meetings.
Oh,
that's a fun story.
Paul wrote it down. He's like, that's a good one.
On this day in 85, Tears for Fears went for 2 weeks as the number one singles charts with "Everybody Wants to Rule the World."
They sure do.
That's a great song.
Yep.
We're going to kind of just leave it there. Oh, on this day, 2003, Zeppelin were number one on the U.S. album chart with their triple live album, How the West Was Won, the band's seventh U.S. number one album. Performances were from 72 tour of the United States, recorded at the L.A. Forum and a whole bunch of other places. That is worth getting. If you don't have the How the West Was Won box set, you should definitely check it out. It's if you love Led Zeppelin, there's a lot of great like archival stuff in there and super fun stuff. Okay. Lily V6, what do you do?
I have a show. It's called Hot Licks with Lily 6 Thursdays, 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Rock Rage Radio. You can get the app Rock Rage Radio or just go to rockrageradio.com.
All right. And shout out one more time to wolfscustoms.online. Do great work with refinishing music, different kinds of musical instruments, any kind of musical instrument. It doesn't just, it does not just a guitar or bass or whatever. RockRageRadio.com. Download the app. Don't forget to go to LouLombardiMusic.com to get your own copy with lyrics and an interview with me talking about the meaning of the song. Go to LouLombardiMusic.com for that. I'm going to play the song as we leave today. And iTunes, please go to iTunes. Give us a go to rate and review. Give us the 5-star and say something nice about us. We really appreciate it. Don't forget to subscribe. Pittsburgh Kevin, anything you would, any parting words you'd like to leave with us?
What? What, Lorraine? What?
Guys, have a great week. We'll catch you all on the next Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.
Song.